open the Senate Revenue Committee. First up today, we have we're going to get to hear from the state treasurer, who's going to update us on the action that Moody's and Fitch has taken on Friday, and then again Monday. And Kate, I don't know if you're going to. You're on call.
Well, good afternoon. For the record, my name is Randall Edwards, State Treasurer of Oregon, and I was asked to come down and probably answer questions more than make any statements about the credit rating of the state of Oregon. Last week and yesterday, we received note that the state's credit by two major rating agencies fell. Fitch downgraded us two steps. Moody's downgraded us one step. Standard & Poor's, which is the third major rating firm in the country, has continued to keep us on a negative outlook, which, if you recall, we went into a negative outlook situation with Moody's last fall. And really what that's saying is they're watching us very closely to see how we manage ourselves in this economic and budgetary times. I was very disappointed that both of those two rating agencies knocked us down, because I do think we have an opportunity, you have an opportunity, to put together a budget for this upcoming biennium, not the one we're still in, to show that we can manage ourselves through this process. I think some of the highlights, though, that I want to point out, which really I think is part of my message to you, is there are some challenges, some systemic challenges that we as a state face in managing our finances, which, I think if you pick up the Fitch report, really highlight. And let me just kind of cover a couple of those points and then maybe open this up for question. It's without saying that in the short term we've got a challenge with a budget that is facing a large deficit as we go into the next upcoming biennium. They see a balance sheet that came out at the end of the last reporting period in December that showed we had over a $1 billion deficit. Again, a situation where our assets are below our liabilities. Liabilities having to go up in order for us to manage a cash imposition, which has been a challenge for the state. We've been using a fair number of one-time revenues, as have other states, to get us out of this last 1.5 years to 2 years and shortfall in revenues. That not that that we're unique, but we've also had to rely on that enormously. But I think the more systemic problem that's facing this state, which was highlighted again, and you can follow this, is the fact, of course, that we have an income tax, and in using their words, which is a very economically sensitive income tax system. And we saw how sensitive it is to the good times, and now we're seeing how sensitive it is to the bad times. On top of that, and having that income tax system, we have a unique 2% kicker law, which, again, these folks look around the country, and there's a handful of states that do have only an income tax revenue system, but they see this as a governor by which prohibit the state, maybe more from a political point of view, in my opinion, than from an economic point of view, of putting money aside during the good times. And when they look out into the future, when this economy comes back, having that law on the books and in the Constitution will again be a challenge for the state to put reserves aside, which, again, they highlighted as a unique aspect of Oregon. I would add, and I was in here last week talking about ballot measure 5 at 4750, I would add that that mandate on the state's general fund is also the reason why we have a bank account that's extremely broke right now. And that unfunded mandate has grown immensely over the years, and it will continue to grow. But we have not been able to come up with another way to help fund our public schools outside of an income tax system that has certainly put, in my mind, the K-12 system in a very dire situation. So, again, I think what the rating agencies, what's important here is they gave us a report card. They don't like what they've seen. They don't like what they're seeing in the future. They think our hands are somewhat tied. Fitch put a fair amount of weight, both in terms of the revenue forecast that came out in December and in March with a downturn in the revenues, but also they put a fair amount of weight in the failure of ballot measure 28, overlaying a political inability of the state to address some of the financial challenges it faces. That's a judgment, but again, I think they see that in terms of the public's willingness to make changes on a revenue picture. They see an initiative process that has also been a variable that they've watched over the years that has certainly played an impact on the general fund of Oregon. And they've seen five special sessions. And again, through personal conversations with these rating agencies, the difficult process by which you went through to try to address this, the state's finances, again, another challenge, and of course, putting out a ballot measure to address, through ballot measure 28, some of the finances, again, that being another problem for the state. I just wanted to let you know that these folks, as you know, are in New York City. They read the papers. They're not blind to what's happening. They're not only reading Oregon papers, they're reading the New York Times. They're reading Doonesbury. And I think we've received a fair amount of national attention as well, which has certainly raised their concerns in addition to analyzing how well the state's faring under this situation. They make a very clinical view of what they believe the state's financial picture is today and also how we're going to address it into the future. And it's all relative. It's all relative to other states. So, again, I think what we should, as a state, take from this is that we have a challenge ahead of us, which we all know is there, and really begin to look at some of the fundamentals of how well we manage ourselves, both in terms of expenditures, revenues, not only in the short term, but the long term. And I think that's the challenge for this legislative body, is to put together a package in the legislature that addresses both the short-term needs, but the long-term concerns that were raised here by the rating agencies. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Questions for the treasurer? Senator Ringo.
Thank you. Thanks for coming, Senator Treasurer. When the rating agency downgrades us, does that say that they believe there's a slightly increased chance of a default on our bonds?
Mr. Chair, Senator Ringo, no. What they're saying is that they see the risk profile of the state, not necessarily default, but just the overall costs applied to risk. I'm here to tell you we will never default on a bond, but what they look at is the financial integrity of the state in many facets. It's the economy, it's how well we manage ourselves, it's how we issue bonds, who's issuing those bonds, the marketplace. It is more of an overall indicator of the health of the state of the state. It's not an indication that we won't pay our bonds, because we will.
Thank you. Other questions? One of the things that I noticed in the media reports on this, it's interesting to read both the media reports and then read the actual reports from the companies, because you get this view from out, we're all here involved in the particular decisions, but you get this view from outsiders. And you begin to see a picture, and they paint it pretty clearly, of whether it's the borrowing that occurred or it's the voter referrals. And I don't know if, or the kicker law, and I don't know if you would want to comment on, you kind of did in your opening, the view that from 3,000 miles away and some of the prescriptions that you at least would counsel us to take in mind as we go into this next budget period.
I'll answer that. Let me give you a context. The last time we were downgraded was in the mid-80s, and that was largely around two things. One was we were in a recession in the early 80s that carried through, and we certainly know what the unemployment rates were in the state at that time, significantly higher. But the other big driver for them and concern was the Department of Veterans Affairs home mortgage program, which was about a $6 billion program that was, and quite frankly, the financing was almost bankrupt. What I take from this downgrade is this is really looking at something different, and that is how are we as a state managing our finances with this financial structure? And that, if you look at some of the high points, that's what they're saying is our challenge. They've indicated these points along the way. Again, they've highlighted the initiative process. They highlighted the fact that we never had a rainy day fund. They again highlighted the kicker, and they've been doing this over the years. But it all came to head when they highlighted Measure 5, they highlighted Measure 50, 4750. I mean, these are things that they've been cumulatively talking about, but they all got collected here in the last week as a result of the continued fall of the state and then looking at where we're going into the future. They don't see a lot of change. And, again, the collective challenge before us is how do you put together not only a budget, and I guess my advice would be you've got to look at some of your revenue side of this coin. It's not just, again, a balancing act of continued on the expenditure side, you've got to show them that you're willing to make some decisions about how you're going to manage revenues and look at increasing the pot. Unless you could think, and they don't believe, that you can go out and continue to cut yourself down to a point where you're living within what revenues that they see projected for this state for the next couple of years. They do not believe, and they do not like to see states trying to build themselves out of what they think is just an economic pull through. That is not in our case. They think that's a greater risk because they don't feel that we're coming out of this anytime soon. On a up note, they did say that if you look at some of the economic diversification in the state, and that technology has been and will continue to be a good economic diversifier for Oregon, and it will continue to be a good place to have bets for the state's growth. But again, it's not too hard to figure out how that revenue stream that we built up over the 90s fell apart, in part because, again, with that economic sector, capital gains, stock options, growth in that sector built up a lot of revenues to the state. But when the market turned and all of that turned around, we certainly didn't. We saw what's happened. That's been an enormous part of the reason why we're sitting here as well. So,
Sarah Corpin.
Well, I just want to put on the record, thank you, Mr. Treasurer, for making an appearance today and sort of walking us through these ratings. I got a constituent, well, he's not a constituent, I got a letter from a retired teacher who used to live in the Newport area and now lives in Portland, and he was criticizing the media's reportage of this story yesterday, saying that, I won't repeat which particular TV station it was, but he accused them basically of editing the story down and not reporting on the issue of the kicker and on Measure 28 and all our borrow and spend tactics that have cumulatively, as you just pointed out. I mean, you can Measure 5, 4750. Tom Bryan was here during those days. This has been a cumulative record that we've built up, and it's now coming home to haunt us in terms of additional costs that we're going to have to bear now in this process. So I just think that it's really important to restate the issue that as we go forward and look at, there's a lot of groups out there looking at how Oregon got to where it is, its over-reliance on income tax and lack of sufficiency in the tax structure in total. Hopefully this more in-depth discussion that you will participate in as our treasurer will maybe make some lights go on with some of the folks out there who, want to do the right thing. And I think of the business community. They basically have said, we're not going to play in any revenue, any future revenue game until you show us government efficiency and you fix PERS. Well, we're down 24% from where we were in May 2001, so I would challenge a business to be that efficient, especially in delivering human services and education. So I don't know where the business community is, but they better hop on. This is their territory. Moody's is not a labor goon's territory. That is a business territory. And I hope that the business leadership in this state starts paying attention to that. And I think PERS is going to be fixed the best it can be fixed. So the obstacles that they've raised in the past to come up with this revenue neutral sales tax proposal that I think is just obscene given the $2 billion shortfall. I hope you'll be out there with the groups that are out there providing this education. So you're doing a very good job.
Thank you.
Peter? Appreciate your time. Thank you very much. For short notice, we appreciate...
No problem. We're always available if you need...
Oh, great. Well, stick around and testify on the next bill.
It's nice to know you can translate something from New York.
We will open a hearing on Senate Bill 549. Elizabeth is making her way up to let us know what this bill does. And Fred and Mr. Passador and Mr. Salzgiver, if you'd like to be the first panel. Elizabeth, what does this bill do?
Chairman Deckard and committee members, With Senate Bill 549, what this is doing is increasing the maximum payroll tax rate for mass transit districts by 0.1% of the wages that are paid of each employee. It requires the payroll tax increase to be phased in over a 10-year period beginning on or after January 1st of 2004. It's going to limit the annual payroll tax rate increase to 0.02%. And it's going to apply then to payroll and self-employment tax reporting periods beginning on or after January 1st, 2004. So basically, under current law, mass transit districts the ability to impose a payroll taxes on the wages of employers within their district with the adoption of an ordinance by the district board. And currently, Lane and TriMet are the two mass transit districts which are imposing a payroll tax of a maximum tax rate of 0.6%. That's the current rate. And this is just going to allow an increase of 0.1%. And as far as the revenue impact, if the two mass transit districts that are currently levying a payroll tax adopt ordinances to increase their payroll tax rate by 0.01% each year, then the revenue impact here shows what additional revenues could be raised from that additional higher tax rate. And it's roughly in 2003-05, $6 million for TriMet, $681,835 for Lane. 2005-07, $20 million for TriMet, and then Lane, it would be $2.27 million in the 2005-07 biennium, and 2007-09, it's like $37.2 million in that biennium, and $4.2 for Lane Mass Transit.
Thank you.
Mr. Hansen? Appreciate your patience with us.
Oh, we appreciate very much the opportunity to be able to appear before you. For the record, I'm Fred Hansen. I am the general manager of TriMet. With me is George Passador first, and I'll let him introduce himself, and then we'll turn to Mike Salskipper, and then I'll begin, if that's all right.
Good afternoon, Senators. My name is George Passador. I'm the president of the TriMet Board of Directors. I'm chair of Wells Fargo Bank and chair of the Portland Business Alliance.
Mike Salskiver. You want to just introduce and then we'll...
Mike Salskiver, State Government Affairs Manager for the Portland Business Alliance. Excuse me.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, again, thank you for the opportunity to be able to appear before you. We are here, obviously, to be able to support Senate Bill 549, introduced at our request. We appreciate that very much. I have, before each of you, color slides that we have ultimately used as a part of a PowerPoint presentation, but thought that the slides would be more effective here. What I'd like to do is, before turning to the specifics of the bill, give you just a little bit of background on TriMet itself, and then go to the bill and then ask our board president, George Passador, to speak to you as well. First, TriMet was created in 1969 as a mass transit district of the state of Oregon. Our service area covers much of the three counties, Multnomah, Washington, and Clackamas County, some 600 square miles. In that area, we operate 97 different bus lines, 38 miles of light rail, and also provide 9,000 parking spaces in both our own park and ride as well as in our shared park and ride. And the map that's there before you highlights that. We go to the next slide. See another important service that we provide in addition to the bus and rail service you are familiar with. TriMet also provides the essential alternative transportation called Lyft to the frail, the elderly, and the disabled. Alternative transportation is a requirement of the Americans with Disabilities Act, but it's also what we consider to be a very important part of our mission. Lyft uses 185 specially equipped vehicles to provide door-to-door service. We provide about 3,000 rides every day, and the demand is growing about 7% per year. Again, with the grain of the population, I think that number will increase over time. Because of the personalized nature of this service, that is the door-to-door element, not bus stop to bus stop, it is expensive service. It's at about $16 per ride. The fare box, that is the amount paid by the individual, is about $1, a little bit less than that, depending upon the individual, the class of individual that's there. But it does mean that, obviously, it's cost that we incur. Ridership growth, next slide, speaks to really what we've seen over the last 10 years. Max ridership as well as bus ridership and Lyft is growing at a record pace. We've had 10 straight years of ridership growth. Combined Max and bus ridership is growing at about 5% per year. Total system-wide, we've supplied just under 90 million rides last year.
Senator Farrelly.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I saw that on the first slide on the Lyft issue, we had a $16 per ride cost. On the ridership growth slide, there's 88.6 million rides a year, and the patrons pay about a dollar, but I don't have any idea what the cost for the ride is.
Of our system, Mr. Chairman, Senator Farrelly, our overall system is at just under $2 per ride on average. Those 88.6 million rides are our total base of rides, most of them on the bus and rail system. Relatively few, that is 3,000 on a daily basis on the Lyft.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
If I might turn to the next slide, clean air, something that I've worked obviously a lot on over my professional career. There are many reasons to be able to support increases in transit investments, but one of the really important ones is clean air. TriMet reuses about 4.2 tons per day of smog-producing pollutants, accompanied by music. This reduction in pollution is not only important to our health, but it's important to the health of the economy. The Portland metropolitan area is on the margin of being in compliance with the federal health standards, the National Ambient Air Quality Standards, and we could easily slip back in to non-compliance. But because of the role that we are able to provide, that is taking individual automobiles off of the roadways, we are able to assist the greater Portland region in maintaining its compliance with those standards. If they were not in place, that compliance, there would be an imposition of at least $10 million on businesses to be able to come back into compliance by the nature of the federal law. Another way to look at what that benefit is, I think we all recognize how incredibly important employers such as Intel and Tektronix are to our region. If the amount of pollution we take out of the air is the equivalent of about four Intel plants plus 12 Tektronix plants, that combined level. And those are plants are exceedingly clean plants, and yet it gives you some sense of the jobs that are related to those plants that are directly related to the benefit that's provided in terms of clean air by TriMet. If I may also turn to the bus system improvements, because about 70% of our riders are on the buses, and they will continue to be the majority of our ridership. We are making major improvements in the bus system, adding new low-floor buses for easy boarding, new shelters, improving customer information, and on-street amenities. One of the things I would turn you to is the photograph on your right on that slide, a bus shelter, but it highlights one of the innovations that we have put in place. If you see in the back of that shelter, kind of a leaf motif-like sketch on those glass panels. We were finding that our glass panels, clear glass panels, were attracting lots of graffiti, costing us about $240 to replace a single glass panel. What we have been able to do is to suggest one of our employees take those scratch panels out, sandblast a artistic design into it, this being a leaf motif, and able to reuse those glass panels at about a cost of $40, not the $240 necessary to replace that. The next slide also talks about some of the things we're doing on the bus side. One of the things we think is very important is to take the guesswork out of riding transit. Because all of our buses are equipped with global positioning system, we're able to track within 10 meters where they are anywhere in the greater region. That also allows us to give information to riders about exactly when their bus will be arriving at their bus stop. And it counts down, as you see it there at the bottom, from 15 minutes, 14, 13, on down, and allows them to be able to make better use of their time, go get a newspaper, a cup of coffee, go to the ATM. as long as it's Wells Fargo's, I'd like to point out, to be able to make better use of their time. This last September, we were able to bring it up onto our webpage so that anybody from their home or their office may, in fact, pull up this information on all of our 97 bus lines and the major stops as well. One of the things that is very important in our system is the fact that ridership is growing at a rate and demand for our service at a rate faster than we're able to provide it. We are able to, with our current resources, able to increase our service at about 1.5% per year. Not during this tough economic time. We're holding at just being able to keep even. But we are, over time, our economists indicate that we will be increasing at about 1.5%. However, the regional transportation plan, that which is adopted for the whole of the region, calls upon us to be able to grow at about 4% per year. And the question is, are we able to accomplish that? One of the key elements of that is to be able to ensure that we have the capital to be able to build projects, whether they be light rail or purchase additional buses. Efforts underway locally are attempting, in fact, to address those issues. But one of the things that's very important is to be able to make sure that we stay in line for the federal dollars that are coming. And if you turn to the next slide, one of the things that is important is that the federal government, their major transportation legislation is in six-year increments. We've had ICE-T. We now have T21, the Transportation Efficiency Act for the 21st century. Right now, the Congress is going through the process of the new six-year authorization. Well, what's so very important about that is that as they go through, they are putting in place authorizations for projects at the local level. There are three key elements that the federal government requires of projects to be considered for authorization and ultimately to be able to receive the discretionary dollars that are available. Number one is the projects must deliver ridership. They must be provide for connections in the land use to be able to make the whole of the system work and work well. In that, Portland scores very high, the Portland region scores very high, and will continue. Number two is that there must be, for the construction of projects, local match available. Generally speaking, that is at about 50 cents on the dollar, sometimes 40 cents. That's an issue that's being right now wrestled between the Congress and the Bush administration on exactly what that match will be. But likewise, in that, whatever that match ratio is, we need at the local level, likewise, to be able to come up for construction that local match. Those efforts have been underway and will continue to be to make sure we have local match. Third, however, is the federal government asks, and appropriately so in my opinion, that that any transit agency that is going to be building one of these projects has the ability to operate it for at least 20 years. Obviously, the federal government does not want to build a project or be contributing to the building of a project that will sit idle. What is critical here is that we must demonstrate, we TriMet, to be in competition for those federal dollars, to be able to show that we can operate those projects for at least 20 years. And that is the nature of what Senate Bill 549 provides us, and that is the ability to demonstrate that over time we can provide that level of funding. What it does mean is that it has been able to secure us, on average, over the last 10 years, $1 billion of federal discretionary dollars that would have gone to a Salt Lake City, a Denver, or an Atlanta, but have come here because of the efforts of our congressional delegation. Senator Smith has been one of the key elements in that, but also to be able to recognize how important it is to be able to move ahead and have those discretionary dollars. If I turn you to the next slide, I want to be able to stress to you that we at TriMet have really looked internally to ensure that the level of funding that we're asking for, that we have looked at every single place internally to be able to find those savings. In November of 1999, now over 3 years ago, we launched, with the board's involvement, an effort called our Productivity Improvement Process. It is aimed at making our processes smarter and cheaper to be able to make sure that during even this tough economic time, and we have certainly faced very tough revenue pictures ourselves, we've been able to hold our service because we've been able to identify from using frontline workers, having their ideas come forward and be implemented to be able to save us dollars. We have saved a total of $10 million so far. We have identified over the next three fiscal years another $8 million to come out of our productivity improvements. The next slide speaks specifically to what is before you in Senate Bill 549. The payroll tax was adopted in 1969 at the, as your staff has indicated, 0.6%. The effective rate today is 0.6218%. That is because of the nature of the law and how, if an area withdraws from the region, the payroll tax is still covering any potential outstanding indebtedness. The payroll tax covers about 33,500 employers, and the revenue in 2002 was just under $150 million. What is the proposal before you is to be able to meet those operating needs. That is the third leg of that three-legged stool to be able to receive those federal dollars for projects is to be able to demonstrate our ability to operate those projects. The bill itself would authorize the TriMet board to increase the payroll tax by 0.1%, phased in over 10 years, meaning 0.1% on average per year. It is important to note that this legislation does not increase the payroll tax upon passage. Instead, it allows the TriMet board to demonstrate to the federal government in this interim, however, that we have the financial ability to pay future operating costs of our transit projects and thereby be in line for those projects and the authorization that's necessary. Furthermore, the bill established the TriMet board cannot increase the payroll tax greater than 0.2% in any 1 year, although still on average over the whole 10-year period, 0.1%. I would turn you next to the last slide. It as phased in, although your economists are a bit more optimistic about what that will produce, we use Randy Podzina from Eco Northwest, and his indications are that it would generate $23 million annually when fully phased in. That is in 2002 dollars, so it is not reflecting the inflation-adjusted dollars. But a little bit less optimistic than your economists, or that is legislative staff has indicated. Lastly, if you see on the final page that we have support from a large number of entities, this is not the complete list, but gives you a sense of the entities that have been very, very supportive of this. In conclusion, I'd just like to be able to stress that the importance of Senate Bill 549 in this legislative session is to allow us, even if it doesn't go into effect immediately, to allow us to be able to speak to the federal government, to be in line for those federal discretionary dollars that I think have been so very important in terms of delivering good transit, but also high and good-paying jobs throughout the Portland region. Thank you. Mr. Passmore?
Okay, thank you. I think the general manager's summary for you today is as inclusive as I would expect that you would probably need. Let me just summarize a few points, if I may. That first of all, it's awkward at best to be here at a time when you have so many issues facing you to be requesting yet another increase in a form of a tax. This is a decision that we did not come lightly to reaching, and it is one that before we ever arrived here, we feel we have done an enormous amount of preparation for this. We realized that if we were going to expand the service, that we would need to valve up more revenue. We looked at what the options were in that regard, and in that process, we identified the Productivity Improvement Program. We didn't realize those more than 2 years ago when we started these conversations that we would be experiencing the revenue situation that we have found ourselves in over the last 2 years. And it, as the general manager had pointed out, had we not taken those steps, had we not had the cooperation of the ATU and all of the others that participated included in that productivity program, we wouldn't have been able to meet our current service levels under the revenues that we had. So I'm pleased to be able to be here to tell you today, this is not a life or death issue. This is a matter of growth and a matter of taking the agency to the next level of service delivery. It's a matter of matching what the expectation is in the growth plan for the region. So we're looking for the ability to be able to raise this rate by 0.1% over a 10-year period. We went to the largest payers of the system, those who, through their payroll tax, pay the majority of this, and we found universal acceptance of the concept and outright support by the many companies that you see listed there. In fact, over 300 of the largest companies, in addition to their payroll tax, also provide a subsidy to the employees of their companies, either through outright purchase of monthly passes or subsidies involving portions of those passes being compensated by the companies themselves. This is an agency who gets very high ratings from not only the people who use the service, but those who pay for the service. So what we have a board of directors that is made up of professionals and leaders in business, labor, and law enforcement. And we would look to the expansion of this payroll tax to be something that we would tie to what we would all realize is an improved economy, one that there would be no debate amongst our board as to whether the time had come when we could move forward with this. And all new revenues collected would only go for new service. That would be the commitment that we would be making, not only to the public at large, but to ourselves, that this is to cover expansion of the service. So I feel that in spite of the fact that we're here and it is a form of an increase in a tax, that the $1 billion that the federal government has invested in this state, in the absence of military bases or other opportunities to do that, that we have a reputation established with the Federal Transit Administration and with others in Washington, that we are an organization that knows how to use these monies wisely, complete projects on time, on budget. In fact, our latest project is being completed early and under budget. And for that reason, we find ourselves in a position when we're seeking federal funding of being able to be advanced to the front of the pack very quickly. The $1 billion that was invested in the West Side Light Rail as the last major piece of our expansion contributed to over $3 billion of transit-oriented development. We're seeing along the East Side Line, which is now in its third decade of use, much of the transit-oriented development is continuing to develop along that line. And we expect to see the same thing occur in the Interstate Max line as well. So in many ways, I could argue that for this relatively modest investment in this authority to be able to move this at the right time, it would reap many times a multiple of dollars back into the economy through expansion of growth and development. Thank you.
Thank you. George, have you calculated that 0.1%, what that would be in terms of a percentage increase, either for the average employer or for Wells Fargo in particular?
We have calculated that for every employer that we have met with, and I'll ask the general manager to summarize those.
Yeah, average is always a little bit difficult, but basically what it is based on is those 33,500 employers. If you take the bottom about 80%, that is over 25,000 of those employers, they pay relatively small amounts today. That is, their average payroll is about $87,000. They would pay under the, in the first year, this increase would mean about $8.70 for on average for those 80% of those employers, building to about $87 in year 10. Obviously, the top 20% are larger and would pay more.
Thank you. Mike.
Chair Deckard, members of the committee, for the record, again, my name is Mike Salzgiver. I currently serve as State Government Affairs Manager for the Portland Business Alliance in Portland. On behalf of the Alliance and our over 1,250 members, I want to thank you and your colleagues for this opportunity to offer some words of support for SB 549. Forgive me, I'm at the tail end of a cold here. So.
Me too.
It may strike some of you as odd that a business alliance would be in here to support a bill to authorize an increase in the payroll tax, or any tax for that matter, and not just for transportation but for any purpose in the current climate. And I want to assure you that we did not come to this position lightly. As Fred will attest, we had him through the ringer at least three times at a number of subcommittee and committee meetings and at our full board in which we went through the numbers, went through the process, went through the mechanisms for how this would work. But in the end, our board voted to support this proposal by a 27-2 margin for a number of reasons. One of the things I want to say that's not in my written comments is that in the Portland area, we view transit as one of the three critical elements of a fully functioning transportation system: maintenance of the existing system, modernization of the system to build capacity as the area continues to grow, and then a fully functioning transit system. Without investments in each one of those legs, the stool will tip over at some point. We regard transit health as equivalent to business health, frankly. And at a time when you are not likely to see significant new capacity into and out of the or access into and out of the Portland metropolitan area, using the existing capacity we have is very important, and transit helps us do that. With respect to this particular proposal, the Alliance Board in the end supported it for basically three reasons. One, you've heard Fred talk about the productivity improvement program. The things that are done in that program are what private business does every day. And for them to be able to identify $10 million in savings and a continuing stream of savings into the future was impressive to us, and it's precisely the kind of thing that we would expect any public agency to do. And they were impressed with the results. Second, TriMet, in our view, has made the case that their service obligations are growing to the point that they will be unable to meet their obligations within the next few years without the authority to increase their revenue. We believe that the increase being requested, which is equal to 1/100% per year for 10 years, is a responsible and measured response to their revenue requirements. If approved, it continues to demonstrate the region's ongoing commitment to carrying its share of transit funding burden, which allows us in turn to remain competitive for future federal transit project funding. And finally, the Alliance's board was pleased with TriMet's commitment that it would be unlikely to exercise the authority under this bill until it was clear that the region was well into economic recovery. That was an important element for our members. We believe it's a responsible approach to take, and it reflects once again the role that TriMet has assumed, and that is being a good and solid partner in the overall economic health of the region. So with these thoughts in mind, Mr. Chairman, we would urge the committee to favorably support 549.
Thank you. Senator Starr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's the process kind of question as the bill is drafted. Gives you 10 years to phase in the increase, but we're talking about not starting the increase until the economy recovers. Would you foresee waiting, let's say the economy recovers in 2005 or 2006, would the increase then start at 2006 and be concluded at 2016, or would the increase start at 2006 and be concluded
10 years after the bill is effective on January 1, 2004.
Chairman, Senator Starr, it's always dangerous not being the lawyer, but my understanding is that it's 10 years from the time the that the increase has begun, which is to say, to, in your example, 2016.
Just one additional follow-up. The bill allows, if I read it correctly, limits the annual payroll tax increase to 0.02%. But we're talking about 0.01%.
Chairman, Senator Starr, the concept here, at least as drafted, was that if there were a special need in 1 year to be able to not impose even the 0.1%, that the board in their judgment would look at it and say, we really ought to be able to, you know, skip a year because maybe there's a weaker part of the economy or something else. That this would say, however, to be able to make that up, you can't go over the 0.2% in any given year.
Thank you.
Senator Ringo.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, I just wanted to thank the business community for supporting what I see as an investment in our community, in the livability and also the economic health of where we live. So thank you for coming and supporting this.
Now, Paul, did you have anything to do with Mike Salzgiver's cold here? Paul has given two of us a cold.
That's too much information.
I apologize.
You did a good job. Thank you.
Thank you.
We worked closely, but not that.
Well, he's given Representative Shetterly and myself that same cold.
That's the best way to get rid of the cold is to give it away.
That's right. Len Lundquist, Randy Tom, and Buzz Ortiz. I hope I got all the names correct. Afternoon.
Good afternoon. I'll start out. I'm Lynn Lundquist, president of the Oregon Business Association. I'll just say to start with, it's nice to come in on an issue that I think there's a real solution to, in contrast maybe to some of the issues we were facing yesterday when we were in this room. The Oregon Business Association is a statewide association. I think the first question you rightly should ask is, why is a statewide association dealing with somewhat of a localized problem or localized issue? We do follow quite seriously the fact that we do not get involved in local issues except where we think they have statewide significance. And I think that's the core of why we're here today, is because we really believe that this does have statewide significance. And it touches on two of our major three planks of Oregon Business Association. Two of them are transportation and sustainable environment and economy together. And I think this fits into both of the transportation and the other one I just mentioned as well. Just like the Portland Business Alliance, we went through a lengthy process. Actually, two of our committees worked on this issue. Fred came in and made his presentations. Actually, I'll tell you, to be all candid, that one of the committees voted yes and one of them voted no to promote or to support this. But when it came to the board and we looked at the total picture, it was unanimous in the board that we do support this this approval for giving the authority to increase the tax. I will say that the reason we did that primarily because of two reasons. First of all, They gave us assurance that it would be for new services. And that's important, I think, in this business climate we find ourselves in, that we're looking at new services for the monies that are new monies. And secondly, that it would not be imposed without having support from the business community, and they're doing that, and we take the word that that will happen. I think it's a dramatic situation when you can actually have something that is in a tough business climate come forth that is, I believe, good for business in the long run, and it's certainly good for the environment at the same time. And we often don't have those kind of opportunities. And so the Portland Business, Oregon Business Alliance shares the Portland Business Alliance that we will support this in a major way.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairman Deckert and the rest of the senators. My name, for the record, is Randy Tom, and I'm here to testify in support of Senate Bill 549. I'm the president and CEO of Bioreaction Industries, and we're a small startup company that has about 20 employees located in Tualatin, Oregon. There aren't a whole lot of startups these days, but we are one of those ones that is still hanging in there. We provide sustainable technology-based pollution control equipment to utilize natural occurring microorganisms to basically break down those hazardous air pollutants that Fred was talking about and convert them as a food source to carbon dioxide and water vapor. If we were to go and have continue to have some of the challenges that TriMet was talking about, our business actually would probably improve in the Portland area, but I'm here actually to support TriMet's position in this program. I've never been to Salem before to testify, so I want you to understand that this is very important to me, and I think that with Senate Bill 549, we're looking to increase the taxing authority by 0.01% over that 10-year period, and I do support that. A little bit about my experience with TriMet is about 3 years ago, I thought, like many others, that it was an inefficient program, TriMet, with considerable waste, taxing my business in Tualatin, where I had very little TriMet service. And I really was, as with most business owners, very concerned about the expenses because these are tax dollars that we're paying out. And the expectation that I have, just like anyone else, is that I want to have those tax dollars used efficiently, effectively, and to be accountable. I happened to be flying back from Washington, D.C., and was sitting next to Fred on the plane, and I shared my frustration with him about TriMet. And he kind of got an earful. I had him 5 hours on an airplane, and he had to listen to me for the entire trip. I shared with him just my frustration with the fact that I was living in an area where I was paying a TriMet tax, I wasn't getting service, and I was really questioning whether or not TriMet really had the system in place to accommodate, you know, why was I paying the money? We talked about it an awful lot on the plane, and he shared with me kind of his vision of TriMet, and although I was impressed, I wasn't overly sure as to, you know, whether it was just the story or what exactly it was. In any case, much to my surprise, about a week after I returned from Washington, D.C., I got a telephone call from his chief financial officer telling me that Fred had asked me to be on the Citizens Advisory Committee for Budget at TriMet. And I was kind of shocked because I thought, does Fred really want me to tell that committee what I really think? But I think it was important to understand that, you know, I was pretty skeptical as far as what TriMet was all about until I actually got in and started looking at the numbers and looking at how this business is being run. I think that it's, I think in looking at this business, it's run better than a lot of private businesses in the state, and it is doing some things that a lot of private businesses in the state are not able to do, and that is implement programs and stick with them and make them successful. The productivity improvement program that's been talked about an awful lot is a program that is near and dear to my heart as being out of the manufacturing environment, having worked in that environment. And to see a program that has the organization and discipline to continue through the process and stick with it and be in existence 3 years after it started is a credit to Fred and his team, just in the sense that most, as you are well aware, most programs in businesses are here today, gone tomorrow. And this is a program that is being successful. It has saved TriMet over $10 million, which has allowed them to continue to have the level of service that they've been providing, even though the economy has cut into their funding sources. And this has been something that I think is commendable on the part of TriMet, and I wish that we could see that happen with a lot of other state agencies, in the sense that they're utilizing their employees and empowering their employees to encourage change and to save money. It's saving jobs. It's allowing the agency to operate without having to reduce service or reduce employment. And I think these are all positives for the agency. I think they focus fundamentally on changing the way the business is done, and I think it's something that should be commended. I support this bill, and I urge you, Mr. Chairman, and the members of the committee here, to grant the TriMet the increased tax authority. TriMet's PIP program should serve as a model for other agencies. And as policy majors, I would encourage you to support agencies like TriMet that are being fiscally responsible. We need to reward that kind of behavior and encourage it throughout the state. The money from this increase will help operate the new commuter rail line, which would finally be something that would be going into Tualatin. And I think it brings a lot of benefits, both commercial and residential development and benefits in the throughout that area that it's going to travel through. And these investments are very important for my business, as it allows us to grow and develop our business further. Finally, I want to recognize that, as George had mentioned, the recession is not necessarily a good time. But before putting this increase in place, I have assurances from TriMet, and I'm very comfortable with their assurances that they will make sure that we don't increase this until we are ready and until the economy is ready for us. Thank you very much for your time, and I appreciate it.
Thank you. Mr. Ortiz.
Thank you. First of all, I want to thank you, Chair Decker, and members of the committee for the opportunity to speak to you today. For the record, my name is Baltasar Ortiz, and I own Ortiz & Associates, a small business employing 10 to 25 people in Oregon. This number will vary from depending on our workload, and I'm here to testify in support of Senate Bill 549. And I support this bill for three reasons. First, the investment is worthwhile to my business and to the community as a whole. As a small business owner, it is important to me that my employees are productive and independent. A lot of my employees use TriMet services to get to work. Even though we pay a living wage, many are still at or below medium income. And as with gas going up every day, this really could not come at a better time. It's even more important that my people have an affordable and reliable way to get to work. As a small business owner, I am willing to pay for investments that will make sure my employees are able to come to work every day without placing a severe hardship on them. The money from this increase will be used for new services, giving my people more options to get to and from home, work, and other transportation needs. But it's just not about my employees. TriMet provides an essential service, especially for low-income and Hispanic people. For some TriMet, and its services are the only way for many transit-dependent people to get around. I frequently ride the MAX and the bus to get to meetings in downtown Portland. And yes, there are people with ties using TriMet to get to work, but there are also very vulnerable people who use TriMet as their only means of transportation. As a business owner and advocate, it is important to me that we provide excellent service to my people. Finally, there may be a perception that this is going to create an undue hardship on small businesses. Others may have concerns about the timing. As a small business owner, I want to encourage you to support this bill. It's a very minor increase in payroll taxes that I will pay for my employees. For the first year, we're talking the equivalent of lunch and dinner for two when it's finally phased in. I'm willing to pay it, and it's a good investment that has brought over $1 billion in funding to the economy and local jobs in the region. Just want to thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today.
Thank you. Thank you for making the trip down today. Questions for the panel? Appreciate y'all taking the time to come down here.
Thanks.
Chairman Bryan, Pat Hawken, and Linda Lynch.
He's the chair?
He is our chair.
Oh, my God.
I know.
Does that pay more than regular commission status? The chair?
I could explain that to you after the meeting.
It's a voluntary position in Lane County, I believe.
I won't dispute anything you say, Senator. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, good afternoon. It's good to be with you today. My name is Tom Bryan. I'm chairman of the Washington County Board of Commissioners. We ask you to act favorably on Senate Bill 549, and I have presented to the clerk a packet of letters of support from a number of local governments in the Portland area and as well as the Port of Portland. We support Senate Bill 549 because our region's ability to increase and sustain economic vitality and our quality of life is dependent upon continued investment in our transportation system. Our system works best when it presents a balance of modes and choices for our businesses, residents, and visitors. Public transit plays a vital role in balancing this system. Our region experienced population growth of nearly 25% in the last decade, with Washington County experiencing nearly 50% growth since 1990. Clearly, the demand for careful planning and development of multimodal transportation is critical to ensure that we meet the demands of an increasing business and residential demand. Revenues that could be generated under Senate Bill 549 will directly serve to meet this operational demand. The revenue is also essential to allow TriMet to demonstrate the stability and operational stability in the future. As Mr. Hansen referred to it, this is required for most of our federal funding that they show a 20-year operations plan. And so projects such as commuter rail and others, South Rail and many of these projects must demonstrate a long-term operational viability. Okay. So whether it's for bus, rail, or other services, these funds that would be made available through Senate Bill 549 will help that aspect as well as direct services locally. It's important to note that Senate Bill 549 does not raise the TriMet payroll tax, but increases the authority for the TriMet board to do so. The increase in the authorization, as you've heard, would allow the regional discussion to continue, a discussion of projected transit service demands, and the benefits of increased transit service to take place. In fact, as you've heard, TriMet has already engaged the business community extensively in such discussions. Mr. Passador and Mr. Hansen have assured everyone that these discussions will continue, number one, that payroll tax increases would not occur during this recession, and that all revenues would be applied to future services. We have full confidence in them and their statements. We all know that good bus and rail service provides people choices on how and where they want to go. It also creates capacity, which supports commerce and increases automobile safety on our congested roads. Availability of transit can also be a catalyst for tremendous economic activity. For example, development alongside West Side Max is over $1 billion in value. We anticipate that the Wilsonville to Beaverton commuter rail line, projected to open September of 2005, will have similar positive effects. Our region's population continues to grow, and with that, our reliance upon transportation systems' ability to move people and freight. With the appropriate resources, transit will not only maintain but increase its role as a key element of our transportation system. We need to continue to provide mobility options and roadway capacity for our region. Now, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, we respectfully urge this committee to allow our region to continue its national reputation for planning and developing of multimodal transportation systems, and to allow this important regional discussion about the cost and benefit of public transit to continue. Your committee can accomplish both of these important matters by approving Senate Bill 549. Thank you.
Yeah. Tom, do you know offhand how what was the genesis in terms of the state having control over local transits and the payroll tax fee that they set?
Say that again, please.
Do you know offhand how the state became the arbitrator of local transit payroll tax fees? How this authority, has it just always been the state has the authority to, first the state has to give local permission to?
Right. Senator, I think it would go back to the formation of TriMet itself, that when it went regional back in the, I don't know if it was late 50s, early 60s, and then the payroll tax came along in the mid to late 60s. And it's just been there ever since. You know, Metro was originally a state agency as well, and has, through charter, become a regional freestanding government. TriMet is still a state agency in that regard. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Linda Lynch. I'm with Lane Transit District, and our board member, Pat Hawken, is with me today. We're here, of course, to support Senate Bill 549, as it does include Lane Transit District as well, because we also collect a payroll tax. Lane Transit District is 32 years old, provides about 6 to 7 million rides a year. Generally, we think of LTD as about 10% the size of TriMet, so that what we've calculated it would such an increase in the payroll tax might raise would be about 10% of what TriMet raises. And the same is true pretty much across the board in terms of number of rides provided, other kinds of attributes. When you look at the two systems, you can kind of think LTD is about 10% the size of TriMet. Pat is our longest-serving board member. She was appointed to the board by Governor Roberts and knows far more than I do about everything that happens at LTD.
Thank you, Linda, for that introduction. As Linda said, my name is Pat Hawken. By profession, other than being a board member, I'm a certified public accountant, and I work for a public accounting firm in Eugene. I really appreciate the information that you've been given by TriMet, because many of the issues that they've talked to you about already are issues as well, and many things, it's a matter of scale, not a matter of different issues. We are an active participant in the transportation planning for the Eugene-Springfield metropolitan area, and we've recently adopted a transportation plan, the city's, the county, and Lane Transit District, and we've been given a lot of responsibilities under that plan to increase ridership so that we can help reduce congestion, avoid the cost of building new roads or expanding road capacity, and also to maintain the air quality in the area. And although right now our fleet is in our method of providing our fixed route service is strictly with standard buses, and our system is a bus system basically. We have some initiatives that we've embarked upon that, and what we call it is bus rapid transit, which is basically a way to create a light rail type system at 5 to 10% of the cost. We would continue using buses. We would have dedicated right-of-way. And we see this as a way to increase ridership without increasing costs proportionally. So it's a way to help us manage our resources. And we have had some success up to now with the federal government, and we have a pilot corridor that's about to be constructed. But to continue this program and develop the whole system, we're going to need a lot of federal assistance, and we're going to need a lot of money to match the federal funds that are coming in. Let me talk a little bit about our service as it is right now. During the last fiscal year, we had to take a serious look at our budget, our general fund operating money, because it was clear that unless we made some cuts and found some efficiencies and some productivity improvements, that we were going to have to really cut back on service drastically. So the first thing we did was look at administrative positions. We cut administrative positions, and then we looked at supplies and materials, and we made some more cuts there. But when we got all done with these, in order to have a balanced budget so that our costs were in line with the revenue we could bring in, we actually had to cut 9% service. And that isn't the direction we want to go, and that isn't the direction the state needs us to go or our local community needs us to go. We are, for 2003-2004, we are committed to maintaining service where it is now, and we're going to have to dip into working capital to make that happen, and so which we can't do for the long term. And so we need an increase in the payroll tax to help us maintain the service, to help us increase the service, and you know, to meet all the commitments that our local community is asking us to meet. Mr. Hansen also talked about elderly and disabled services, and we are under the same federal mandate that TriMet is. We have to provide equivalent service to people who are unable to use our fixed route system, and it is expensive. As Mr. Hansen told you, it costs about $16 a ride, and that's, you know, and that includes we actually have some outsourcing on that to keep our cost at only $16 a ride. We get some money from the state, the cigarette tax, which you're aware of, but we still have to contribute about $1 million of local general fund money, money that comes from the payroll tax primarily, to maintain that system and to meet our federal mandates. Let's see. We have about 7,500 employers that pay our tax. We have instituted what we call group pass programs so that there are 30,000 people in our community who actually have a pass that allows them to ride our buses anytime. And these passes are paid for by employers. And also, well, we have a pass program with the student body at the University of Oregon, and they pay their own fares. But all the others are employers do pay this. And so there is a commitment in the business community to increasing transit ridership. We have 80% of our riders use a fare instrument other than cash, meaning that that really is an efficiency for us because we don't have all the cost of processing dollar bills or dollar and a quarter, and you know, so we regard that as a productivity item as well. I think I will just stop there and let you ask questions. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much.
Oh my gosh.
Have you all done outreach to your business community? TriMet had several of their representatives in here. Have you guys been?
I think I'll let Linda answer that because she's been doing a lot of the outreach on that topic.
Yes, although I didn't bring any with me. I obviously didn't bring business community support with me today. Yes, we have met with the chambers.
The chamber
local,
thumbs up.
Generally, yeah. we didn't ask for a vote, so I don't have an official position from them. We did make the same pledge that, given this authority by the legislature, we would come back to them before we would have the board enact the increase.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So we have made the same pledge that TriMet has made to the business community and continue to meet with groups in the community and are continuing to build that support.
I might add that LTD has, we've had the statutory authority since 1973, I believe, but to levy a tax at a certain level. But for half of our existence, we have not had the tax at the maximum level. It has been at the maximum level since 1994, and before we raised that, we did have a fairly broad community outreach where board members and other people went and met with various members of the business community and explained why we thought we needed that increase and what we were hoping to accomplish with that. So we have a history of having that kind of contact with the business community, and I expect that to continue.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Mr. Shiprack, you have the floor now with Mr. Carlson and Mr. Anderson.
Good afternoon.
How are you?
For the record, Mr. Chairman, I'm Bob Shiprack. I'm here today representing the Oregon Building and Construction Trades Council. A lot of what I do in this building anymore is try and find something that'll give some hope for some work for my members. We're currently suffering about 25% unemployment, and unfortunately that number is getting bigger. So we've talked to TriMet. We've obviously been very active over the past number of years on a number of light rail projects. We indeed work with the federal delegation as well to try and get federal funding for these projects. They employ a lot of our people, and we're getting really good at it, too. I think one of the things that hasn't been said is that the last two projects not only were under budget but ahead of schedule as well, and I think that says something for the way TriMet and other agencies have contracted out this work and the quality of people that we've got. So I'm just here today, Mr. Chairman, lending our support for this, hoping that we can get federal match for this and can expand the light rail system in the Portland area. We'd love to do it in Eugene, too. Hopefully provide some employment for Oregon construction workers and contractors. And I'll just leave it right at that. Very self-interest.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for your time here today. My name is Jeff Carlson. I represent the International Association of Bridge Structural Ornamental Reinforcing Ironworkers Local 29. We have 1,200 members, and our jurisdiction includes the entire state of Oregon and Southwest Washington. I'm here to support Senate Bill 549 for the obvious reasons it creates jobs for the members. 25% unemployment would be a good goal for me to achieve, because we're experiencing 30% unemployment at this time. I know this is not a short-term fix. It's something that, but it's something to look forward to in the future. Just, you know, and for livability reasons, aside from jobs, I've been an iron worker for 30 years, and I've traveled and worked all over the country, New York City, San Francisco Bay Area, and Seattle. And I use mass transit in New York because it's just ineffective to have a car in Manhattan. and it's a burden. And in Oakland and the Bay Area and San Francisco, I use BART. But I spent a year and a half in Seattle, North Seattle and up in Everett when they did the Boeing expansion for the 777 airplane. And what a nightmare. I mean, they dropped the ball years ago. And I just hate to see Oregon go in the same direction that Washington State did. I mean, even the configuration of the geographics up there would warrant that you have to, you know, do something other than cars and buses. There's nothing more frustrating than just sitting on a big piece of concrete on your way to work or on your way home from work, where you could be doing other things. And I've ridden mass transit, reading the newspaper and looked out the window and seen all the parked cars. And, you know, my quality of life was enhanced because of mass transit, and in particular rail transit. So we support this for more than one reason. Thanks.
Yeah. Good comment on Seattle. I think a lot of us have had that experience when we're up there, and it's almost too late for them to actually build a viable transit structure.
My name is Mark Anderson. I'm a government affairs manager for Electrical Workers Local 125 in Portland. We represent about 3,700 members in four Northwest states. Two-thirds of our members are in Oregon, and our largest employers are Portland General and Pacific Corp. But we also have a large number of folks who work in electrical construction, and those would be the folks that would benefit from an expansion of the light rail project. We would put most of the electrical infrastructure in place, except for the controls. And we are strongly in favor of this funding. I'm working on the end of a cold, so I'm not going to say too much, but for the same reasons that Bob and Jeff stated, we do not currently have the same unemployment figures, but we do want the work and we need the work. And on a personal note, I have commuted from Vancouver, Washington for over 20 years, and in 15 of those years I was a TriMet customer. Patron, and I've been very impressed with their service over the years. So, thank you for your time.
Yeah, thank you. Any questions? Thank you very much. Mr. Perry and Mr. Gallagher.
Right. Do you intend to notice today?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Bill Perry. I'm the Director of Government Relations for the Oregon Restaurant Association. And I would like to start out by saying that transportation funding is an important issue to our industry. Worked with Senator Starr and also spent the last year with the Portland Progress before they combined with the Portland Business Alliance trying to find solutions in the Portland area. And I think it's a concern of all of us. I would say, as far as this bill is concerned, is I'm supportive of the program, but the tax has got a great concern to us. The restaurant industry has long been opposed to any payroll taxes per se. Hospitality industry is traditionally a very labor-intensive industry, and the hospitality industry also has one of the lowest rates of revenue per work hour. So if you take Multnomah County alone, each man-hour that I produce, I actually only produce $28 in revenue. And so what happens in our industry is, even though these are small incremental costs, it's hard to pass on because of the low total revenue as it relates to that. Also, our labor dollar, 35% of it, or our total dollar, 35% of it goes to labor, and 3% of it on average goes to profit. And so what you're doing is taxing the highest percentage of our labor, or our dollar that comes to our door, and we have the hardest ability to try to transfer it. And also, the payroll tax is not indicative of a business's ability to pay a tax. once again, you're taxing the highest rate of our production. And so it makes it more and more difficult for small businesses, especially in the restaurant industry, to pay for this. And it's, I mean, let's be bluntly honest, this is a 16% increase in the tax. And it's a 16% increase in 35% of the dollar that comes through my door. So this is going to be a disproportional hit to the restaurant industry as it is to others. We agree with trying to fix transportation. It's one of our biggest concerns. The payroll tax is going to hit us harder than any other industry, and we've continued to try to work with people on transportation. We just do not feel that this is the vehicle to be taxing at this point, because it's a tax on jobs. In a point, we've got one of the highest, if not the highest, unemployment rate in the country. So with that, I'll let Tom go, and then we can answer questions.
Mr. Gallagher.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Tom Gallagher, representing the Urban Developers Coalition. I think all of my clients have been in conversation with TriMet or are on the Portland Business Alliance and are supportive of the work that the Portland Business Alliance did in shaping this bill the way that it is. They've asked me to get on the record, I think, 3 points. The first point is that all of the discussion we've had is, and I've heard it here in testimony, is that this is not going to be imposed on anyone during an economic downturn. I have looked at Section 2, and again, I'm not, maybe misreading it, but I don't understand how they can get to the full percentage increase if they don't increase it by 0.02% a year over the 10-year period. Now, admittedly, I'm not a math major, so somebody can probably explain it to me. One of our thoughts is that if we're not going to impose it during an economic downturn, and that's not essential to the federal dollars, that we find some way to mitigate Section 2 here. There's also been a lot of assurances made, and assurances by very credible and respected people that we respect. So I don't anticipate that they will increase the tax during the downturn. I just don't know how Section 2 then becomes implemented to get them to the level that they need to get to. The second point is that all of the assurances made to us are that the additional payroll taxes would only be done to fund operations of new to be constructed rail lines. And that's fine. I think that makes a big difference, that it's not just going into the general operating box of it. But again, there's nothing in the bill that says that, and this is a 10-year commitment and a long time out. And I think we'd be a lot happier if there was some direction as to how this was going in the legislation. The third thing I would say is that I appreciate all the people that are here and all the support for transit. And it is important, and it offsets a lot of the industrial air quality problems, and it is very valuable for the gridlock, et cetera, that we could have in Portland. I just wish the same group of people would turn out on other industry issues like freight mobility and the funding that we're going to need in the new tax toward industrial access to industrial sites. So there are a number of issues that we need to fund, and I think this piece belongs in the mix with all of the others. It's a very valuable piece, and so are these. I think we should do all of them, but I thought it would be important to get that last piece on the record. Thank you.
For the record, Bill Perry again, I wanted to make one other statement that I know has been brought up to individuals outside the room, but also remember, the city of Portland is also looking at an additional 0.04% payroll tax for schools in an essence, the same or a majority of the same reason or area tomorrow. And so, you know, that has, I think, created some extra volatility, at least in the metro area, that other people are looking at payroll taxes as a funding source for different options. So just as a point of information.
Bill, do you know, are they going to vote? Is that vote going to occur? Is there some certainty that that will occur tomorrow?
Portland. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I really don't know. I just know they're having a discussion tomorrow, and so I said I don't know what their timeline is at this point.
Great. Questions? Appreciate it. Mm-hmm. Our final panel, Mary Lou Ritter and Roger Martin, even though he made fun of my tie before this hearing today. So, Mary Lou, you get to go first. And if we have time, Mr. Martin, you can...
Good afternoon. I will not speak to your tie today. My name is Mary Lou Ritter. I am the Director of Disability, Aging, and Veterans Services in Washington County. But I'm really here more as an advocate for elderly and disabled transportation. Roger and I and TriMet have worked together over the years to address the critical issue of transportation for those who are no longer able to drive. And my comments today in support of the Senate bill really are focused on the needs of people with disabilities and the elderly, because transportation is critical to their self-sufficiency. You've heard a number of remarks today that talks about the economics of transit. It's also an economics for people who can't drive. Transit, as we know, is the most cost-effective method of getting people around. You heard about from TriMet the cost of a Lyft ride at $16. We are encouraging the expansion of transit so that more people can ride the cheaper mode, the bus and the light rail. And this bill will help to fund future service in areas that are underserved now, and we're looking forward to that. TriMet has been an effective partner with us in the elderly and disabled community. We've engaged in a comprehensive planning effort that has identified what the service level for people who no longer drive need to be in our communities. We are looking at ways of coordinating resources to reduce duplication. We have also successfully fought for additional funding from other sources, the cigarette tax funds, for example, that unfortunately I think have been taken away from elderly and disabled transportation, is a key component in that. And I would remind you that cigarette tax of 2 cents for elderly and disabled transportation is a key funding component in this discussion, a different topic, though. We've also successfully sought general funds for elderly and disabled transportation to help to support transit. And I know that TriMet has looked at fare increases as well. So it's not like this, you know, that we haven't been looking for other revenue sources. We have, and we continue to seek those sources. We really support the expansion of services in geographic areas that are currently underserved, serving the senior and disabled population, and therefore we support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you,
Mr. Martin.
Mr. Chair.
Mr.
Senator Starr.
I think you should, before Mr. Martin testifies, require in any further opportunity for Mr. Martin to testify before the committee that he come showing proper respect to the chair of the committee with proper neck attire.
I couldn't agree more strongly, especially considering walking in that he criticized the tie that I was wearing.
Exactly.
And I think it was a huge mistake on my part not to notice that he did not actually have a tie on. Maybe that was a jealousy factor.
Mr. Chairman, I'm duly chastised. I did not criticize your tie, but the color of it. You looked like a Trojan rather than a duck. And I know you're a good duck. If you'd had green on, I wouldn't have said a word. And by the way, since those are swans in your tie, I want you to know that within Senator Starr's district, I've been helping to feed 250 swans all winter long on a piece of property that I helped put feed out on. Mr. Chairman, I'm Roger Martin. I'm the executive director of the Oregon Transit Association. I'm also the oldest human being in this room, and I was a member of the 1969 and 71 sessions of the Oregon Legislature that created this, and I might help with a little of the historical background you were talking about. In the late 1960s, Rose City Transit Company, a private entity, went out of business, leaving the city of Portland and its environs without any transportation. At the same time, the small bus system in Eugene cannibalized itself down to about 25 buses. And one Friday afternoon, the owner of that system walked into the city manager's office in Eugene and dropped a big ring of keys on his desk and says, "Here's the key to your new bus system. I'm out of business." With systems around the state having that experience, the legislature tried to decide what to do, and we created several kinds of entities. We created transit districts, and there are three in the state. The two largest ones, Lane Transit and TriMet, are here today. And we also created transportation districts that are of a smaller type, funded solely by a property tax. The transit systems were given a list of taxes that they could choose from. And I can honestly tell you, because I served on the
revenue committees. They were called tax committees in those days. They created these tax systems. We gave them a potpourri. They could choose a sales tax. The board of directors could choose a sales tax, a property tax, a payroll tax, and an income, corporate or personal income tax. In the case of TriMet and Lane Transit, they both chose a tax on payrolls. And the basis of it was that they are broad-based, low-rate taxes that are uniform across the system rather than our income tax system that's created all the havoc that we now experience in the state of Oregon. And for over 30 years, they had not been back here to say we need to increase that. They're coming today to ask for that, I think for very good reason. I've been, during all that period of time, a private owner and a taxpayer as an employer. And I could tell you, if this hearing were held 30 years ago in 1973, you'd have a room full of people from business complaining because they didn't like the payroll tax. But over the last 30 years, we've come to experience that of all the taxes we pay, it's probably the least onerous. I've asked my accountant every year, and she shows me the figure, and it's worth it. It makes sense. It's not like the federal income tax that drives me up a wall in which we seem to have little impact on. I think you heard from the businesses here today that they support it. Now, I can understand the Restaurant Association and others. I happen to be in a business that has a high salary or high wage level compared to the other expenses we have. But I'm satisfied.
You have two employees back here that are...
I know, they're disagreeing, but then...
strongest I've ever seen someone disagree.
I did want to say that the Oregon Transit Association is made up of 50 transit providers that range from dial-a-ride, elderly, disabled transporters to the larger systems represented here by TriMet and Lane Transit. I want to make just one simple point. All of the members of the Oregon Transit Association solidly, completely support this effort because there's a simple term for it. When they grow, we grow. When TriMet and Lane Transit get stronger, the rest of transportation all over the state, and I'll give you a couple of simple things. TriMet especially, but also Lane Transit, have been the most supportive over the whole career, the 20-plus years the Oregon Transit Associations have existed, in supporting us in ways that don't seem obvious. They go to rural areas to help us with training of staff. This is extremely important. TriMet has on their payroll, because they do this for large numbers of people, so people are very experienced in how to train people. They've lent those people to the rural systems that can't afford to have that kind of expertise. They hold workshops and they host our folks from all over the state to try to help them in compliance with things like the federal requirement for ADA. Had TriMet not offered to do that, and when the ADA first came in the 1990s, we'd have violations probably by smaller systems ever, just by they didn't know any better. They offer us used vehicles. A number of TriMet buses have ended up on systems where they can be used for a couple of more years. They allow small agencies to reap a cost saving by coattailing on purchases. And we've had people all over the state, smaller systems who want to buy a bus or two, hook onto a TriMet purchase order for 30 or 40 buses and get a good quality bus at a lower rate than they could possibly get doing it on their own. They funded an additional person. This is one of the most extremely important things that happened in the last couple of years. With the federal grants that we receive, we have to fill out voluminous paperwork, which are totally beyond the capability of our smaller systems. TriMet has lent one of their experts to help all of our members in making the applications to Region 10 in Seattle. We'd be a mile behind. And the FTA are the first people to admit that TriMet gave a wonderful service. So as they get more out of what they can achieve from this, all of our people will prosper, and every one of them supports Senate Bill 549, and I certainly hope you'll pass it.
Thank you very much. And, Roger, thank you for your – I asked for the historical background. I just want to credit you. You gave a far more lucid explanation than the commissioner who I asked.
That's because I'm about 10 years older than he is.
Thank you very much. We will have this bill back before us shortly. And with that, we are adjourned.